Okay, so ready to dive in. Today we're tackling a case, a really important one, that sent shockwaves through the world of securities law. 1968, SEC versus Texas Gulf Sulfur, often just called Texas Gulf Sulfur. And get this, we've got a whole pile of sources to sift through. Podcast excerpts, perplexity analysis, a standard legal brief, even quotes straight from the judges' mouths. This is going to be good.
You got it. We're going to dig deep and understand just how this case, this one ruling, changed how we think about insider trading.
Exactly. And for everyone listening, this is about way more than some dusty old case. Texas Gulf Sulfur laid down the law, literally, on principles that still affect how our financial markets work today. We're talking big picture stuff here, the kind of knowledge that's essential for anyone, really, operating in finance and business.
Couldn't agree more.
So, to kick things off, let's set the stage. It all begins with Texas Gulf Sulfur, TGS, striking something potentially massive, a huge mineral discovery in Ontario back in November of 63. But this wasn't your typical breaking news situation that hits the headlines right away.
Nope, not at all.
The real story here is what unfolded after that initial discovery. Before the public even had a clue, certain individuals within PGS, we're talking high-level executives, and even some of those geologists involved in the discovery itself, started buying up company stock. Not just that, they were snatching up call options too. And this wasn't a quick thing. This buying spree went on for months, from November 63 straight through to the following April.
So basically, these insiders were sitting on a gold mine of information, an advantage, a huge one, that nobody else had. And you know what happens when secrets like that start floating around?
Oh yeah, the rumor mill starts churning. By April 64, whispers about a major mineral find by TGS were spreading through the investment world. TGS, trying to get ahead of things, put out a press release on April 12th. Now, this is where things get really interesting. This press release downplayed the whole thing. Premature and incomplete, they called their findings, basically telling investors, don't get too excited.
Which in hindsight seems incredibly misleading, especially given what happened just days later.
Right.
April 16th, just 4 days after that cautious press release, TGS does a complete 180. They announce to the world a major, a seriously significant mineral discovery. This, of course, gets the SEC's attention, the Securities and Exchange Commission. They weren't messing around. They hit TGS and those insider traders with charges of securities fraud. Specifically, they cited Section 10B of the Securities Exchange Act and the big one, Rule 10B5.
So the SEC's argument was you can't play the market with information that isn't public knowledge, and you definitely can't mislead investors with half-truths. This is where the legal battle really heats up. What were the main points the court had to sort out?
The court had two big questions to answer. First, did those TGS insiders break Rule 10b-5 by trading with information that was not only secret, but also, and this is important, material to investors? And second, was that press release, that April 12th one, actually misleading investors, enough to be considered a violation of securities laws?
I remember reading something about materiality being a key concept in this whole case. The trial court, I think, had a specific date in mind for when that discovery actually became material from a legal perspective.
You're right. The trial court initially said the information about the mineral find wasn't legally material until April 9th, 1964. What that meant was, in their view, any trading that happened before that date wasn't a violation.
But the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, they had a different take on that, right? And this is where this case really starts to rewrite the rules.
Big time. The Second Circuit threw out that whole fixed date idea of materiality. They came up with a much more flexible standard. Materiality, they said, isn't about a specific date on the calendar. It's about whether a reasonable investor would consider that information important enough to change their mind about buying, selling, or holding a stock.
So it's less about knowing every detail about the mineral deposit, like its exact size or value, and more about whether the average investor would see that information and go, oh, maybe I should reconsider my investment strategy.
Precisely. The Second Circuit said even those early drilling results, if they hinted at a potential major discovery, could be considered material. If it's something a reasonable investor would act on, it's material. Judge Waterman even mentioned speculators and chartists, you know, those folks who make decisions based on early trends, even if they're not 100% confirmed. He said the rule applies to them, too.
And I'm guessing the potential size of this mineral discovery, the fact that it could send TGS stock skyrocketing, that played a big part in how the Second Circuit viewed its materiality.
Absolutely. This wasn't just some minor find. The potential economic impact was huge, enough that the court figured any reasonable investor would see this information as really important way before April 9th. This is what leads to one of the most impactful parts of this case, the disclose or abstain rule. This wasn't just about making things fair. It was about building trust and efficiency in the market, making sure everyone has the same information to work with.
Disclose or abstain. It's like the golden rule of insider trading now. Can you break down exactly what the Second Circuit put in place with this rule?
Sure. This rule basically puts anyone with material non-public information, usually corporate insiders, at a crossroads. They have two options, and that's it. Either they tell the public about the information, make sure everyone has equal access, or they don't trade any stock in the company until that information is out in the open. No exceptions. This disclose or abstain rule became the foundation, the cornerstone, of how we regulate insider trading.
It sounds pretty straightforward, but I can imagine it can get a bit tricky when you apply it to real-world situations. What about that press release TGS issued? The court found that to be a violation too, right?
You bet. That April 12th press release, the one where they downplayed their findings, that got a lot of attention from the Second Circuit. The court decided that the release was misleading. Why? Because it left out key details about how big and how important this mineral deposit could be.
So even if they weren't straight up lying, just leaving out important information was enough to make the whole message deceptive.
Exactly. Judge Hayes was very clear about this. Even if each sentence in the press release was technically true on its own, put them all together, and you get a picture that's misleading, a picture that could trick investors into selling their shares too early before the good news really hit. He even said the press release was misleading as a matter of law. They weren't playing around.
What I find fascinating is that even within the court, there were differing opinions. The judges didn't always see eye to eye on everything.
You're hitting on something really important. Judge Friendly, while he agreed with the majority decision to find TGS guilty, he had a concern. He worried that being too strict about disclosure could scare companies away from voluntarily sharing information, even potentially useful information, with the public. He thought maybe, in some cases, if a company was just careless, not intentionally deceptive, maybe then a slap on the wrist, like a court order to stop doing something, would be enough, instead of hitting them with fines.
That's an interesting point. It's like he's trying to find a balance, a way to encourage companies to be transparent without putting so much pressure on them that they clam up entirely.
Exactly. And then there was Judge Moore. He wrote a whole dissenting opinion, a strong one. He argued that the press release, that first one, was actually truthful. At least it was truthful based on what TGS knew for sure at that moment. He also worried that expanding liability like this, making companies so accountable for every little detail in their communications, could actually hurt transparency. He thought companies might become so scared of lawsuits that they'd stop talking to investors altogether. It's a tricky situation, trying to protect investors, but also let companies do their thing without being paralyzed by fear.
It's like walking a tightrope. You want to make sure the markets are fair and transparent, but you also don't want to stifle communication or create so many rules that it becomes impossible for companies to function. So to wrap this up, what are the big takeaways from SEC versus Texas Gulf Sulfur? What should our listeners really understand and remember about this case?
I think the biggest impact, the one that still echoes today, is that disclose or abstain rule. That's the bedrock of how we look at insider trading. So whenever you're trying to figure out if something's insider trading, you ask three questions. One, was the information actually important to investors? Two, was it a secret? And three, did the insider use that secret information to make trading decisions?
So material, non-public, and used for trading. Three simple questions, but they cover a lot of ground. And this case wasn't just about those individual traders, right? It changed how companies talk to the public too.
Definitely. Texas Gulf Sulfur widened the scope of Rule 10b-5. Now it covers all kinds of corporate communications, especially press releases and anything else they say to investors. The message was clear. Companies have a responsibility to be truthful, but they also have to be complete and not mislead investors, even unintentionally. Even those cautious statements, those "we're still figuring things out" kind of statements, can land them in hot water if they leave out important details or give the wrong impression.
It all comes back to that reasonable investor standard, doesn't it? Whether you're a corporate insider with privileged information or just an everyday investor watching the market, you have to think about that reasonable investor.
Absolutely. Ask yourself, would a reasonable investor want to know this information? If the answer is yes, then staying silent, especially if you're an insider, or worse, putting out misleading statements, that's a big no-no. This case was a game changer. It really put fairness and transparency front and center in the financial markets.
So there you have it, a deep dive into a landmark case in securities law. We've talked about the discovery that started it all, the legal battles, the creation of that all-important disclose or abstain rule, how we define materiality, and the huge impact this case had on how companies communicate with the public. It all boils down to this. Fairness and transparency are essential for markets to function properly, to be trustworthy.
Couldn't have put it better myself. And it really makes you think about the challenges we face today in this world of instant information and data overload. How do the principles from Texas Gulf Sulphur apply to new ways of communicating financial information? This case gives us a framework, a starting point, but how we interpret and apply it in this ever-changing world, that's the conversation we need to keep having.
A conversation worth having, that's for sure. Until next time, happy diving.
Keep those thinking caps on.